And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary T-Word Gilbert. This is my co-host, Dan Ford.
I'm glad you're phoning that intro in.
Yes.
that is the perfect encapsulation of the past week of college football. Just phone that thing in.
This is our 25th episode, Dan. Did you know that?
Wow.
And
yeah, history making.
And what do we have for you? A very by the numbers episode of the Power Hour. Because last week in college football was very kind of by the numbers, but I think you kind of called it earlier, the pre-show, Survival Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always that phenomenon with good teams where it's just, man, it's early. I got drunk too late. I was out late late last night. I can't get ready for this. Oh shit, NC State's beating me. Okay, let's get our shit together. You know, that was just a week full of top teams playing opponents closer than they probably should have.
Yeah, and that kind of started off
with one obvious exception.
Yeah, and that started off with Louisville almost blowing it versus Duke. What was that, Thursday, Friday night?
Yeah, that was the Thursday night game this past week.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, Duke plays a bend but don't break offense and defense. Like they just want to pick at you and pick at you and pick at you until finally they're, you know, you look up and it's a 6-point game in the fourth quarter. They don't give you a lot of opportunities for big plays when you're playing offense, and and Duke offensively has no interest in big plays either. They just want to gum you slowly. And, that can make for some scores where it's like, oh wow, you only won 24 to 14? God, what happened there? And it's just, well, we played Duke.
Yeah. Duke's a team that's not going to give you they kind of play smart. They kind of play like a Duke team you would think. Like, they know they're not very good at football, so they're just not going to do anything dumb and hope you mess up.
Yeah.
Which feels like what a bunch of, yeah, feels like what you would do if you're really smart and not very good at a sport. You would just kind of wait for the other opponent to fuck up and, go with it.
Yeah, this is like a peak Duke, where it's just like, they're not very good, they know they're not very good, and they're just gonna, you know, play low-risk football all the way through.
Yeah, and the difference with this Duke team and previous ones is actually they have a decent coach, for once.
Oh yeah, so, I mean Cutcliffe is making a case for the best Duke coach since the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
I mean Spurrier obviously went, the heights under Spurrier were higher, but he left after like 3 years.
Yeah, the consistency
Cutcliffe has
wasn't
been
there.
Yeah.
And that was the most Duke talk you're going to get all year.
Sure.
So, yeah, Dukies, enjoy it. Well, until college basketball, maybe we'll talk about it.
Yeah, or until you upset Carolina, and then we'll all like just take the opportunity to laugh at the Tar Heels.
But speaking of Carolina, we almost had another North Carolina school get a big upset on Saturday. And that was in your boys.
My alma. Oh man. They rose up to the fray and they let their colors wave. They shout out for dear old NC State, go State. But, you know, if they had a field goal kicker, they'd beat Clemson this week, boys. You know, if they had a guy who could put through the uprights.
So if you're evaluating Clemson after that NC State game, is Clemson not that good? Which they beat Louisville, but are they going to beat Bama or Michigan or Ohio State or probably Washington?
I mean, I think their defense is going to keep them in the game against an Alabama or Ohio State because they do have a very good defense, but their offense has basically just become Watson. I mean, it definitely reminds me of the second year Jameis Winston Florida State team where it's just, the offensive line's not very good. They're not really opening up enough for the run game. We've seen this a few times with Dabo's teams, though, where they'll just have no ability to run the football, and they just end up putting everything on the quarterback. And I think, people are giving Watson a lot of crap, saying he's having a bad season. I think he's just doing the best he can. When the whole offense is basically go make a play, you know, that's a lot of pressure to put on one guy.
Yeah, and there's no major weapons for Clemson. Like, usually with Clemson, there's a skill player besides a quarterback who's like a pretty, you know, athletic, fast guy. Not really that, it seems like, this year with Clemson. Like, there's no, you know, there's no Sammy Watkins or, was it CJ Spiller?
CJ Spiller. Like that. Yeah, I still have nightmares about Spiller.
Yeah.
The other thing about that game is that it will continue the NC State feeling of like there's no way for us to beat this Clemson. Like we cannot beat Clemson. Even when NC State is really, really good, they never beat Clemson. So I guess that'll just continue until I die. We'll just keep losing to them every year.
Oh, and speaking of losing to a team every year, Alabama clobbered Tennessee. Did someone last week say that was going to happen?
Look, I can't remember. Someone on this show did. Someone on this show did, and that's why this is the best podcast in about sports, because someone's going to be right. One of us is going to get the game right.
And Alabama just dominated. And, you know, and Tennessee has a lot of injuries. This wasn't Tennessee at its best, needless to say. But
I think they only have, like, one scholarship defensive tackle who's healthy right now.
Yeah. But Alabama, especially Hurt, ran all over Tennessee.
I mean, it was a disaster for Tennessee. They gave up like 100 yards to, I think Bo Scarborough only had like 5 carries and he ended up with 119 yards. I mean, it was like a old school Nebraska, like 90s Nebraska. We're just going to run the ball on you until you die. Thanks. And we're just going to rotate in about 5 different tailbacks and they're all going to run for 100 yards too. Suck on it.
So now, if you're a Tennessee fan, you find yourself in the weird position of, you're rooting for Georgia to beat Florida, and you're praying LSU does, cause Tennessee's kinda done. In the East, their fate's out of their hands.
They still control their own destiny though, don't they?
No, they need Florida, cause Florida only has, Florida doesn't have an SEC loss yet.
Okay.
Except to Tennessee.
Oh, they have one. They lost Tennessee.
They need one more. And then, of course, Vandy beating Georgia, which we'll talk about in just a second.
Right. I think the biggest thing, if we're talking about what's going to go down the line with the SEC, is that we've now reached that point in the year, which always happens with Tennessee, where the rest of their schedule is crap. Because the back end of the Tennessee vault, if you remember the old Phil Fulmer days, like I do, every year, especially once, like the 2000s, once those Tennessee teams dropped off with Fulmer, every year he would go, well, you can't fire me. Look how I turned it around. And the reason why he did is because all of Tennessee's tough games are in the beginning of the year. Like, they play Florida, like, the third week of the season every year. They play Alabama in the, you know, the third Saturday of October.
They play their biggest rival before the end of October.
Right.
Pretty rare, yeah.
The rest of their season are regional rivals who are always terrible, like Vanderbilt and Kentucky. And I think they still have Georgia, but Georgia's no good.
No, Tennessee already beat Georgia.
They already beat Georgia, so who cares? Yeah. Like, they just got Vanderbilt and Kentucky and I think South Carolina.
Yeah.
Like, who gives a crap? Like, those are teams you could beat even if you were mediocre. So the best friend Tennessee now has is their schedule. It'll give them enough time to get healthy, maybe take a second shot at Alabama with a full roster. They can't do any worse. And if they are able to get their guys healthy, they could, you know, they could maybe use this game, like Alabama, maybe come into that game a little overconfident because they beat them. They beat their injury plagued lineup so badly that they don't give the healthier lineup the same respect. Yeah. So I think Tennessee's best thing going for them.
Yeah. And it's always hard to beat a team twice. That's a big believer in that. Yeah. But let's go to another kind of an upset in the SEC. Vanderbilt.
Oh God.
One point win versus Georgia.
So the worst thing about this for Georgia fans is that every Florida fan saw that game and just started laughing, going, oh man, I remember what that's like. Because this was the week where Kirby Smart really started to get the, oh God, we hired Will Muschamp Jr.
Yeah.
Like, this is a team that suddenly can't do anything offensively, that makes a ton of dumb mistakes. Their defense is really good, but if you just have a good defense and everything else is bad and you make dumb mistakes, you're going to lose a lot of close games and you're going to play a lot of close games with teams that have no business being on the same field as you.
Yeah. And they're starting a true freshman at quarterback, but a guy who didn't see a ton of talent in high school, who came out of Washington. I think he was 4A. So not even the highest level. Is Kirby Smart really the best guy to develop a young quarterback like that? This seems like a situation where maybe you should have kept Mark Richt around.
And is this the best offense for a lead-footed cannon arm quarterback to be in? Because it really seems like this Georgia offense would work a lot better with an athletic quarterback. Because they're basically like, hey, let's run the ball up the middle over and over and over again. And man, it'd be nice if they could bootleg it out on it with to a guy with athleticism. They don't have that. They're trying
Georgia to, does have a really solid tight end. I forget the kid's name, but so something like a quarterback who could play action, bootleg, roll out and toss to his tight end kind of open in the, you know, midfield area would kind of be deadly for Georgia, especially with those running backs. But it's looking rough. If you're a Georgia fan, I know it's first year of Smart, but it's looking like a bad hire.
Look, there's no if you're a Georgia fan, there is no way, in my opinion, that you can shake the feeling that, oh God, we made a huge mistake. Because this was a job where if they had called Tom Herman, they'd have got him. Like, Georgia could have hired everybody that LSU is considering, everybody that Texas is considering, Georgia would have been in that same, Georgia's in that same category as far as quality of a job. They could have really gone out there and maybe hired a lot better coach than what they did, and they settled for Kirby Smart because he's an alumni and they didn't want to have to. What if he ends up being really good and he goes to South Carolina? We'll be so upset. And it's like, well, you hired an unproven Nick Saban assistant, and my God, have we not seen how badly that can go?
Yeah. And like, if you're a Georgia fan, you gotta look at Mark Richt's success in Miami and gotta really be kicking yourself.
In year one, especially. Like.
Yeah, at a school that was dead to rights. Let's be honest.
I mean, that's a school
that looks like a team that can maybe contend
football next
year for the ACC.
Yep. It's just, I don't know how anybody can justify hiring Kirby Smart at this point. Like, I said it was a bad idea at the time, and by golly, I gotta be right about something eventually. This seems like it.
Yes. And then we had another close call, Ohio State, Wisconsin. Came down to overtime for Ohio State to win that game.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin's defense is legit. It's no joke. And Ohio State's defense isn't all that good. Again, I feel like I'm getting more and more proof that Michigan is a better team than Ohio State.
Well, we'll see when they play.
I mean, we'll see.
There's only one way to figure out who's the better team.
Obviously, we're going to have a chance to see it. But, I mean, this is a Wisconsin team that scored like 7 points on Michigan.
Well, Dan, can I say something I'm not very excited about, though?
What's that?
When Ohio State beats Michigan in the game, and then you use all of your football nerd stats to say, well, Michigan's better, even though Ohio State won head-to-head, which is the only way to know which team's better.
I can't argue against a thing that hasn't happened yet. I mean, if they play well against Michigan, then that's that. They haven't played like to this point, Ohio State has not played like a team that's better than Michigan. Michigan has played better every week than Ohio State.
But Michigan hasn't played anybody.
Neither has they've played the teams
played
that Michigan has beat. Michigan beat Wisconsin and did it more convincingly.
Right.
I mean, they didn't need overtime to do it either. I don't know why I turned into Giuseppe Columbus, but I did.
Welcome my Duca host, Danarello Ford.
it's Mama something.
Mia.
It's Mamma Mia, a pizza pie. But you're like, who is Ohio State beat that's any better than anybody Michigan's played?
My thing is neither of them have really beat anybody.
But, you can judge how good a team is even when they're playing bad competition by how badly they beat bad competition. Like, Alabama, even as much as I tend to be an Alabama truther, I cannot deny Alabama's really, really, really good, like, playoff caliber good, because Tennessee probably wasn't all that good with all the injuries. But they left them like on the side of the road bleeding. Like, they turned them into the guy who needs the Good Samaritan to come and help him. I mean, they wrecked them. So it's like, is Tennessee all that great? Probably not. Wisconsin's probably a lot better than Tennessee. But like, Alabama beat the shit out of them. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, yeah, Rutgers is terrible, but Michigan didn't give up a first down. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying Michigan's I don't know yet. I'm not sold on Michigan.
And here's my big point though for Michigan is we have now seen defenses that are demonstrably inferior to Michigan's slow down Ohio State's running game. So if I can see Indiana slowing down the running game and making JT Barrett beat him, if I see Wisconsin slowing down the running game and making JT Barrett beat him, by God, Michigan is going, Ohio State will not beat Michigan unless JT Barrett plays very, very well. I feel very confident in saying that.
Well,
I don't think JT Barrett's got that in him.
I think if you're an Ohio State player, you're playing a little bit harder versus Michigan than you are versus Indiana.
Hey, that's maybe true. But that excuse doesn't hold up for Wisconsin, though, because Wisconsin's won as many Big Ten titles in the last decade as Ohio State has. So I don't see how you can look past Wisconsin.
No, I think Wisconsin's not a good bad team, but a good average team that can rise up to its competition.
Wisconsin is this year's Michigan State, because Michigan State has fallen apart and is abject.
Well, and Wisconsin wasn't that far away from beating Michigan. It took a pretty nice little interception to seal that up.
No, it was over.
Michigan, yeah.
At no point was Wisconsin able to move the ball after their touchdown.
What was the score, Dan? Was it close?
I mean, it's 14 to, okay, who's the guy who's obsessing with numbers now? Like,
there's only two numbers that matter.
If you watched the game, you would know there was less of a chance of Wisconsin being able to move the ball down the field and score a touchdown than it is for frogs to fall out of the sky and start landing on my head.
All it takes is one play, Dan. Just one.
Not when you play Michigan. They're not giving up those big plays.
Every play is designed to score. People forget that.
People do forget that. People do forget that.
That, side story, that was like my C team or JV football coach's big speech to us before one game. He goes, guys, every play's designed to score. Just remember that. I was like, thanks. And then we lost every game that year but one. So, it's a real solid year of JV football.
As are all years of JV football. Yeah,
and I guess some stuff happened in the Pac-12, but I fell asleep. Sorry.
Oh man, you're gonna make Wes mad.
I know.
You're making him all mad.
Washington's good. I think we can just assume Washington's good.
I am starting to back off a little bit, cause like a few weeks ago I said, oh yeah, this is a definite playoff team. And it's like, is it, or is this conference just collapse in quality? Cause like UCLA is terrible.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think if you plugged Washington into the Big 12.
Yeah, they probably
would. We'll hear about a little bit later on the conference spotlight. I think they could do pretty well in the Big 12. I think they could be like the third or fourth best team in the Big 10. They could probably be third or fourth in the SEC. So, playoff team. Taking advantage of a weak conference, but that's a good team.
I think Colorado, like we have to definitely, I mean, at some point we have to start circling Colorado and saying they're probably the best team in the South this year. As weird as that may seem. But it's like Colorado and Utah are going to decide who wins the South. The Rocky Mountain Showdown, or whatever they call that game.
So get excited for that one. But yeah, any other big takeaways from last weekend in college football?
Oh man, Rich Rodriguez probably should have taken a different job.
Maybe going to South Carolina?
Yeah, he maybe should have jumped out the door because they seem like they're getting sick of him. And speaking of getting sick of him, Dan Mullen.
If I'm a Mississippi State fan, I think back to what, it was just less than, what, 5-6 years ago, Sylvester Cohen was still there?
Yeah, go back, there's a famous video that, Holly from, I think, I can't remember her name. She used to write for Every Day Should Be Saturday.
Oh.
It's in a point. But, look it up, Baby I'm Burning. And I believe it's Auburn versus Mississippi State from Tommy Duberville's penultimate season where the final score was 3-2. And it's just the highlights of that game set to Baby I'm Burning by Dolly Parton. And it's just, things can get real bad in Mississippi State, brother.
Yeah.
Things can get real bad. And,
real quick.
They're 2-4. They're not doing well, but Jesus, like, yeah, they lost to BYU, but they lost to BYU at home on the, you know, they went to Provo, thin air, mountains, way too many, surrounded by Mormons. And they took them to overtime. That's pretty good. Especially when you're replacing the greatest player in school history. I think Mississippi State fans are being irrational, but I think at this point Dan Mullen needs to be looking at other options because just because the fans are stupid and wrong doesn't mean that you still won't get fired.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, everybody's talking about the Purdue job. Dan Mullen makes a lot of sense there to me. Cause yeah, that's not the kind of place Dan Mullen would have wished he could have gone to after Mississippi State, but at least it's lateral and he might be getting fired. in another year. So a lateral move becomes a little bit more sensible when you're on the hot seat. And I think he could do very good at Purdue.
My big takeaway from this weekend was, SEC East kind of sucks besides Florida. Sucks.
Like even with Florida, they're pretty shit, right? Like,
yeah, but Florida's kind of been impressing me lately.
Okay.
By beating up on really bad schools. Yes, like Missouri. True. So that's been kind of impressive to me.
Who's better, the SEC East or the ACC Coastal? Cause I'm pretty sure if we had the best teams of the SEC East playing Carolina, Virginia Tech, or Miami, I think they'd all win. I think the ACC teams would sweep that.
I think Florida could do pretty well there because it's Florida. But yeah, besides them, it's a big drop off. But I mean, if Tennessee's healthy, Tennessee could go in the Coastal and do pretty well.
Yeah, that's true. There's healthy Tennessee and then there's injury ravaged Tennessee.
Then there's Tennessee starting like a bunch of walk-ons.
Yeah.
Preferred walk-ons, but still walk-ons. So. That's kind of my takeaway, though. The East, it looks like Florida's to lose to me.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to play LSU on the road, so they're going to end up with only five home games, I think, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Georgia-Florida's not really a home or away. So.
But that game, yeah, it's neutral site. That always feels like Florida has a teeny tiny advantage because that game is closer for them.
Is it? I think it's not that much closer.
It's like 20 minutes closer.
Yeah. Well, But there's still, Georgia shows up for that game, especially the fan base,
that game always ends in somebody being sad. Like, the team that's supposed to win almost never wins it.
No, I've been to the game twice and it's really sad. Like, if you go in as a neutral party and walk away, you're more depressed leaving the cocktail party than anything else. Until you start drinking.
As you should always be when leaving all cocktail parties. Because
the worst part of the largest outdoor cocktail party is you can't drink during the game.
That's ridiculous.
It's awful. Yeah.
That makes me sad.
Yeah. But as we get closer to that, that's next week, right?
How could it be the world's largest cocktail party if I can't drink a sidecar while watching Florida kick Georgia's ass up and down the field?
Exactly. But yeah, let's go to the first of our segments. Sure. We're going to go to the NFL roundup. That's me and West Coast Wes. We're going to recap what happened last week, preview some games and talk about why the NFL kind of sucks right now.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So check it out. And welcome to the NFL roundup. I'm Zachary T. Gilbert and here I am with West Coast Wes.
Another week, my friend, and we had ourselves quite the war Sunday afternoon. I know that you have some thoughts about this coming up short in controversial fashion. I mean, coming out of that game, what were your thoughts? How did you feel when it was all said and done?
And we're talking about Seattle-Atlanta from last week, and I felt kind of confident, actually. That was a good loss. I hate to use words like statement loss or, you know, moral victory, but that's kind of what it was for Atlanta. Like, we fought back in the second half, lost due to a questionable call, but had plenty of chances to win before that. I mean, you know, Matt Ryan Julio Jones kind of tipped a ball, which led to a pick, which led to, a Seattle touchdown. So it's, like, there's some stuff to fix, but I think Atlanta looks like a contender.
I agree with you. I put myself in your shoes immediately because that's a tough way to lose, given that that was a blown call. I'm not going to try and pretend that it was anything else, but I thought to myself, with that aside, a quality loss, like you would say, Atlanta showed that they can go on the road in a hostile environment and compete with a good team. And let's be honest, I don't think you're going to see the running attack get shut down like it was again at this point in the season. I thought Seattle, I mean, that's their strength, in large part, is shutting down the run. So to be able to withstand the early barrage, get in a hole, come out in the third quarter and have one of the most explosive passing quarters in NFL history and then lose by a hair in a game that could have gone either way, I think you have to feel pretty good about things going forward.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Atlanta's schedule coming up, this was kind of the tough part when you looked at earlier in the season. And for them to only have two losses, got to be satisfied if you're a Falcons fan.
I think you are. You go out west and you get one in a a span of 2 weeks where you're playing two of the top teams in Denver and Seattle. I think it would have been a far more devastating loss for the Seahawks to lose one at home. And honestly, when you saw how it broke down with Richard Sherman and the fit that he threw, I didn't feel real good. And I still have some questions going forward about that defense and possible distractions, but I'm not going to bitch and moan too much about a W at this point. I think we both have reason to be happy coming out of that game.
Yeah. And I think it's two teams that you wouldn't be shocked if they're playing each other, you know, in January.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the rematch would be something that we'd all be in favor of because, quite frankly, and we'll get to this a little bit later, they're two of the more exciting teams to watch, I would say, with dynamic offenses. And, I wouldn't mind doing it again, even if it's in Atlanta. And certainly you would feel good about the Falcons' chances, at home against the Seahawks team because you've already proved you can hang in a hostile environment, as I said.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't necessarily, as a Falcons fan, want to go back to Seattle, but hey, you know, it's kind of hard to beat a team two times, regardless of where you're playing them, so that should be interesting. Some other big things happened this week, though. Tom Brady continued his kick-ass tour, just kind of really put it on the Bengals in the second half, and then we saw, we might need to apologize for this one, because Big Ben went down. Something we've been kind of predicting for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know if you've been sitting at home with your Big Ben voodoo doll as I have been, but we clearly alluded to this, that if the Pittsburgh Steelers can stay healthy, they're a formidable team. But we kind of put it out there that we thought that wouldn't be the case. And sure enough, the guy goes down and he's out for what? At least a month, at least a couple of weeks, if not more, depending on the severity.
Could be the whole, I think it depends when they get in there with the meniscus. And it's like, if it's torn, he's out for the whole year. If they can repair it, it'll be like a couple of weeks. So it's really bad or not that bad.
Right. One of those wait and see deals in terms of what they have to do surgically. But, regardless, so that ushers in the Landry Jones era once again, and I know you have a lot of thoughts on this. Can Pittsburgh sustain their winning ways, although they didn't this weekend, obviously, but can they produce with Landry Jones at the helm?
I think with the way they'll game plan, knowing Landry Jones will be in there, it'll be a lot more run heavy, obviously. Probably a healthy dose of Bell and D'Angelo Williams be my guess. But with those receivers, I think you can plug a lot of quarterbacks in there and they can be competent at the best. I mean, you've got some athletic guys who don't need you to throw a perfect ball. This isn't the Jets with Eric Deckard, some other guys. These are big, tall, athletic receivers with Pittsburgh, and that makes them pretty deadly, regardless of who's throwing the ball.
Yeah, I certainly don't think this is the end of the line. No reason to completely panic if you're a Pittsburgh fan for the reason that you said. I know Le'Veon Bell's eyes have got to light up when he sees Big Ben go down. Obviously he's not hoping for injury, but at the same time, you're right. He's going to get a lot more in the way of carries along with D'Angelo Williams. And who knows if Landry Jones doesn't work out, do they still have Zach Mettenberger behind him? I mean,
yeah,
you want to talk
about Mettenberger.
That's a 1-2 punch if I've ever heard one.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping they bring Vic back is what I'm rooting hard for. Maybe a little Mike Vic return.
Oh, I was going to ask Mike or Marcus. I guess Mike would make more sense, mm-hmm. but you know, even Marcus, it's all up in the air right now. I think your point is well taken though. If you put somebody back there who's competent enough, this team has enough in the way of weapons to get you through to the playoffs in the AFC.
Yeah. And especially in the AFC North, which is pretty bad. I mean, it's not AFC South level, but it's not the best. And the Bengals have looked pretty bad. The Browns are a good, bad team, but they're not a playoff team. And the Ravens are awful, from what I've seen.
Yeah, it's
regardless of their record, they're still awful.
I agree. They're they're mediocre at best, and it's Pittsburgh's division to lose. And as you said, while not the AFC South, it's certainly nothing that I would be too worried about if I was the Steelers or really anybody else who has to play in that division a lot.
You know, and the AFC South continues to look just god awful. Featured nationally on Sunday. And this kind of gets us to a bigger problem for the NFL. We see ratings declining, and the quality of play just seems to be really down. I can think of maybe six teams that I might want to watch. Besides that, everyone's kind of mediocre and boring.
I mean, sweet Jesus, we're fortunate that we have the red zone to get us through these games, because you're right. You get up on a Saturday or a Sunday, and you're obviously, you always have that initial excitement. It's NFL Sunday. Let's see who's featured nationally. Let's see what we can watch. And it sets in pretty quickly that this is just a bunch of garbage from coast to coast for the most part. And, again, no better demonstration of that than the Sunday night game, where anytime Houston's involved, like we said last week, in a primetime game, it's not fun. They play in that sterile environment. And on top of that, the Colts are not a quality team either. So this is what we all are forced to watch. Last night, we're forced to watch the Jets and the Cardinals. I mean, you know the game is bad when you start reminiscing about the Bucs and the Panthers, and then you start longing for the Bucs and the Panthers the week previously. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, and to get back to Houston, a team that's owned, I mean, I know J.J. Watt, he's out, and he's a fun guy to watch, but really, haven't really had like a very dynamic offensive player that you want to watch since Foster's kind of glory days nearing like almost 10 years ago, it feels like, at this point, Therian Foster. I mean, Hopkins is okay, but he's not a guy like you circle the calendar. You're like, oh, I got to watch Hopkins catch balls. Pretty boring team. And
he's lost. He's lost now too. He might as well not even exist, because, as you know, if you don't have a guy to get him the ball on a regular basis, then he's basically a non-factor. And I mean, Brock Osweiler, credit to the guy for what he did at the end of the game, but pretty much everybody was ready to never see Brock again, until he pulled that off, including Chris Collinsworth in the commentary booth.
Yeah. And, I think we kind of look at the league right now, and it feels like there aren't any, like, young superstars. Like, we've got Beckham, and he's kind of what you want from a receiver in the NFL. Like, no troubles off the field, but, like, on the field, he's kind of a prima donna. But the league kind of needs that. We need a prima donna wide receiver.
Yeah, you'll take it. He's must-see TV in a lot of ways because, A, his level of play is obviously high, but he is a guy who is set to self-destruct at any given moment during a game. And as a result, you'll watch. So you're right. That's not a bad thing at all. Those guys are few and far between in the league. Gone are the days of a Michael Vick, for example, some guy who is taking over the league. I mean, I don't think that guy really exists right now, unless I'm forgetting somebody.
No, I mean, unless it's, you know, the kid from Louisville, Lamar Jackson, I don't really see a superstar quarterback really coming up soon who's going to be a must-see TV quarterback.
Yeah, I don't either. I none of those guys, the guys that are coming out of the draft next year, none of them get me too excited.
I think Jackson's not going to come out next. I think he has to do another year at Louisville, but,
yeah,
I'm blanking on his name and I feel horrible. Sorry, Dan. The Clemson quarterback, Deshaun Watson. Yeah. I think Watson could be fun to watch. Yeah.
So Deshaun Watson and Deshone Kizer from Notre Dame are your two top QBs according to most of the mock drafts. I mean, Kizer kind of reminds me of a Jameis Winston type almost, and I'm not sure I'm sold on his excitement factor, but you're right about Watson. He's not a bad player. So if he gets in the right situation, maybe there's a guy that we can look for.
I mean, we bring up the team, but you plug him in there, like maybe even with the Browns? With Pryor, and you've got Coleman when he comes back from injury. That could be, and you got Barnrich, the tight end. That's an offense I could see him going to and like doing okay. But you know, yeah, many to really plug him into.
I'll take that. I mean, I'll take that over, I don't know. I'll take that over the Dolphins. There are a lot of teams where I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy in terms of being drafted into a situation. So yeah, Cleveland, why not? I mean, they, at least as you said, they've got something to work with there. But I just fear for these guys who come out and go number one, number two. It sounds like a good thing on the surface, but it could mean the end of your career as well.
Yeah. And so yeah, it's just not really that fun watching a football, right? Especially the national games. And it doesn't get much better this week. By the time you're hearing this, the Bears and Green Bay will probably play a really sloppy, boring game. I think Sunday night Seattle, Arizona's, it's interesting for storyline reasons, but I don't know how fun that game's going to be to watch.
Well, it certainly lost a little off the top end. If you were to think about this game even last year, it was probably one of the marquee matchups in the NFL, given that it's probably for the division. It has a lot of weight, at least, assuming that San Francisco and the Rams continue along the path that it appears they'll stick with. But yeah, Arizona, I mean, they're obviously dealing with injury issues already at the quarterback position. And I guess the one good thing for them is that it is in Arizona, but Seattle's always gone down there and played well. So I'm supposed to be excited for this game as a Seahawks fan. And it's just kind of another game. I mean, I'd much rather play Atlanta again, I guess.
Yeah. And, Arizona opening up at 2-point favorites. I kind of like Seattle in that game. I don't know how good Arizona really is.
I don't know either is what I would say, but I'll take Seattle at this point in the season, at least. I don't even know if Carson Palmer is fully expected to play. I mean, I would assume he would, but the point is that he's already getting roughed up and he took a little bit of a beating last night. So I would put my money on Seattle there.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go in some pick'ems for Sunday. Minnesota, Philadelphia. Philadelphia, Minnesota's opening up, the 2.5-point favorite. I like Minnesota to win that game. I don't think Wentz has seen a defense as good as Minnesota. I think Minnesota's coming off the bye, recharged, refreshed. I like Minnesota to keep winning.
Yeah, I like Minnesota by about 10 in that game. I think they're a solid, obviously they're a solid team, and it'll just be a matter of waiting for Philadelphia to start making mistakes. So I'll stick with Minnesota to stay undefeated and head towards that perfect season.
Here's one that looks interesting to me. Kansas City favored by 7, hosting New Orleans. That could be kind of a fun game if done right, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. It feels like a... Go ahead.
I don't know what to do about the Chiefs. I honestly don't know what to say. I never know what to say. Do you? I mean, it seems like you can bet against them week after week, but you can also expect them to put up a tough effort no matter who they're playing. And given that it's at home, I don't know. I think I'd be, I don't know. I'm going to leave this one to you. I'm going to go with your money on this one.
I feel like with Kansas City, they have to get a lead early for them to work because Alex Smith just can't throw the long ball. And, I feel like if they had like a better, like a strong arm quarterback, like I hate it, even like a Brock Urswile, somebody who could throw the ball a little bit further, they might be a little bit better.
That is a damning statement thrown in the direction of Alex Smith. I mean, I think you've made your feelings quite clear with that comparison.
Yes. So I'm not a big Alex Smith fan. I like Kansas City to win, but not by 7. I think New Orleans goes down big, comes back.
Okay.
Typical New Orleans game. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. I'll go with that there.
We got an exciting marquee matchup. Buffalo, Miami. Buffalo favored by 3. Who wins besides the fans, the lucky people in the Buffalo, Miami markets who get that game?
It is tough to say that anyone loses. I'm going to stick with the Bills, ride the hot hand, and obviously Miami coming off a big win, but I feel like that was a fluke of sorts given the circumstances and
what happened. That feels like an anomaly kind of win, right? They just, sometimes that happens in the NFL. Sometimes a crappy team beats a pretty good team. Just because it's the NFL parity.
Yeah, there are too many weeks in the season, and there are too many bad teams out there, and even the good ones are prone to slip up. So I'm with you there. But that said, I think it's the Bills' week, and I think it'll be closer than we would hope. But at the same time, I'll still go with the Bills to win.
And another one that I'm shocked isn't on Thursday night: Oakland, Jacksonville. Jacksonville favored by 1, so kind of a pick 'em. I like Oakland to kill Jacksonville. I think Oakland's a good team.
I do too, and I think what happened to Oakland is kind of what happened to Pittsburgh last week. Oakland, granted the Chiefs are a better team, than Miami, but I think Oakland just came out and laid a dud this past weekend. I think they'll bounce back, and sometimes that's why a trip to Jacksonville is good for you if you need to get on the right. Headed in the right direction. So I'll go with the Raiders, and I'm still looking at the Raiders for a wild card slot.
Yeah, I still like them to make the playoffs. And Gus Bradley got to get fired if he loses this one. They finally got to get rid of him, right? Jacksonville.
I would think so. I mean, he's had several years now where we keep expecting more and he keeps underperforming. So I think it's a race between him and Todd Bowles to see who can get fired first. Once this season comes to an end, assuming they last the whole year.
Yeah. All right, San Diego, Atlanta. Atlanta's opening up about the 6.5 favorite. I wouldn't mind taking San Diego there. Could see that being like a 3-4 point game.
Sure. I, I think I'm a little more, I have a little more faith in the Falcons to just come out and recognize that they got robbed to a certain extent last Sunday. And then, I mean, that third quarter was, I wouldn't say eye opening because we know they're capable of things like that, but still that was unbelievable. And as a result, I think they're going to come out on fire knowing that they can't let these, what appear to be W's slip through their fingers. I think they put the hammer down early on San Diego and I think they win that game 38-13.
Mm. All right. Well, next up, New England, Pittsburgh, and what felt like a huge marquee matchup. No, not really. New England's favored by 7.5. Tease it up to 14. I think New England kills Pittsburgh, but take the over, which is sitting at 47 right now.
Ooh, 40. Yeah. Okay. I'll take the over as well. And I'm with you. I think this game looks a lot more attractive if we're talking about it last week, but with Big Ben out of the picture, you know, Landry Jones, he needs a little bit of time to get things rolling. He's a slow mover, a slow grower. And I think, maybe 2-3 weeks time, we're talking about Landry Jones as a possible MVP candidate. But for now, I'm going to stick with Terrible Tom on the rampage.
Once he gets rolling by December and he's throwing like 400 yards every game.
Yep.
It'll be Jones time, baby.
Get your jerseys now. But they'll sell out.
Yep. But yeah, the Tom Brady fuck you tour is going to continue. So, all right. We did Sunday night. Monday night, Houston versus Denver. How the hell does Houston keep getting national TV games? Is it just because of JJ Watt? Don't they know JJ Watt gets hurt every year? Like,
I'm at a loss for words, for once. I don't understand. I mean, JJ Watt could be the explanation. Obviously, they value the greater Texas market, but this is just unacceptable for this team to be in prime time week after week after week after underperforming for years. I hesitate to say I'll even watch this one. I mean, I feel like I owe it to myself as a glutton for punishment to check this one out. But if I find something else to do, I might go ahead and take the opportunity. What's the spread on this one?
Denver by 7.5. I'm not touching it. Both those teams are, you don't know what's going to happen.
They played a third eye blind montage to hype this game up as the return of Brock Osweiler to Denver. It was very emotional, but I wasn't fooled. This is going to be a horrible game. And, I'm going to take Denver because I have no faith in Houston. I think Houston is not the worst team in the league, but they're my least favorite at this point. I think that's perfectly clear.
Yeah. I think they're one of the most boring teams in football. Any, like even high school, you know, maybe in sports. I feel like there's an NBA team in there that might be a little more boring, like the Kings.
Yeah.
Like Kings Pistons. I know the Pistons have talent, but just, I don't want to watch that.
I agree with you there, but the point is Houston is the bottom of the barrel professional sports franchise in America, and we're subjected to them on a regular basis with no other options. So I have a lot of issues with Roger Goodell right now, and it starts with the Houston Texans.
But as we get ready to wrap up, anything you're kind of looking forward to? Does it have to be NFL, college, maybe baseball,
just
preseason NBA?
Life in general. Well, you know, the NBA season has rapidly come up on us. It almost snuck up on me this year. I mean, we're tipping off in a week, if I'm not mistaken. So that's always it's always good to have options. That's what I would always say. Take that with you wherever you go. And With baseball still around, I mean, this is prime time for a sports fan because everything's going on.
Yeah. It's gonna be a lot of fun. And I think it might be after NFL's over, but I think TNT or ESPN's gonna start doing like a Monday night NBA game. So that'll be fun.
Well, it's gotta be more fun than the fun that we've been having the past 6 weeks. I don't see how it gets any worse. I mean, basketball, even at its most boring, is still a fast paced game, and you can always focus on some young talent on a terrible team or something along those lines. But now let me ask you this. Let me throw you a little curveball. How do you feel about these games being played over in London? We've got another one of them this week.
Oh yeah.
I almost forgot about it, but I know you would do the same. This thing kicks off at 6:30 a.m. and it's the Giants and the Rams. So, you know, I'll be up at 6:15 just itching for this one to go.
Yeah, this is like where East Coast kind of wins. We don't really win because it's still the London game, but like, it is nice, like, I wake up at 9:30 maybe on a Sunday, get some breakfast, watch some horrible NFL football, and then I can take a nap before 1 o'clock. So yeah. I kind of like the London deal. Like, the Falcons did it, like, I think the Falcons played a London game, like, 2 years ago, where Mike Smith, like, famously, like, just had another brain fart. But that was pretty fun.
Yeah, you'll be living my routine, basically. This is what happens on the West Coast, with football kicking off at 10 a.m. for the most part, usually. So it's a nice way to ease your way into the day. And at least for these people in London, at least they're giving them a team like the Giants, which does have an attraction in Odell Beckham, because I swear to Christ, they throw the worst teams over there most of the time just to give them something to soak up, and those people don't seem to know the difference.
And he hasn't been that great this year, but you got Todd Gurley too. So there are two stars better than what you're usually getting, like Bortles and like Tyrod Taylor. Horrible. So,
it is. Credit to those fans. I mean, I guess it goes to show how spoiled we are, because we're over here complaining about how bad these teams are, and they are. Don't get me wrong, but you throw Bortles over there, you throw Case Keenum over there, and those people are just happy to get whatever they can get. So I guess we could all learn a thing or two from the UK in this instance.
Yeah, and people forget Case Keenum coming off his best game ever as a pro in a loss last week. So maybe she's turning the corner.
I don't know. Don't be surprised.
This could be the beginning.
This could be the beginning. We'll look back on this episode of the Power Hour in 2 years when we foreshadowed the rise of Landry Jones and Case Keenum, and they're facing off in Super Bowl 55.
Yeah, and they're having to rename the MVP awards after both men.
Right. That's the Keenum Jones MVP award goes to whomever. I like it a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for the NFL roundup this week. So back to me and Dan. All right, and we're back. Thanks for that, Wes. A fun time, Dan.
Ah, I love it. I love it. That's my favorite segment of the week.
Yeah, and apparently my dad's. So shout out to my dad. Big fan. Didn't say anything about you or me. Just I really like that West Coast West guy.
I salute you, Mr. Tunney. You are my favorite WWF president.
Gilbert. Yeah.
I've heard it both ways.
But let's go. You got a little conference spotlight here, Dan?
Oh, yeah. This week we looked at the Big 12 as we make our way through the Power Five. Yeah, a lot of conference intrigue, a lot of realignment talk this week. So, you know, if you're into realignment, this was the show for you. This was the segment for you this week. So,
all right. So let's check that out.
Yeah. Thank you, Zach. And with us this week, as always, to talk about another conference on the Conference Spotlight, it's at Cam Kleinert. Cameron, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here for the first ever Big 12 Conference Spotlight. Well, first ever and final Big 12 Conference Spotlight.
Oh, boy. You look, okay, obviously the conference is not going away tomorrow, but oh boy, it's not long for this world.
it'd be okay if it goes away tomorrow, right? No one would really miss it.
Well, it would probably screw things up this season, at the very least.
Like, just make it through the year.
Yeah, Big 12 is that roommate who decides he wants to bail, and it's like, okay, could you just wait till the school year ends before you bail on the lease? It'll be a lot easier to find a summer sublet.
That's true. Although if it was in a dorm and he bails early, you're like, yes, dorm to myself.
Someone has a free room. Oh, man. So the thing about when you talk about the Big 12, there's one thing that dominates the conversation and has been dominating the conversation.
And that's usually snoring.
I feel like this has hung over the whole conference. I mean, it really heated up sooner, but it's hung over the conference ever since really the last bout of realignment when they got stuck at 10 teams. I feel like metaphysically everybody wants it to be 12 again. Like, people are having a hard time with a Big 12 that only has 10 teams.
Oh, you think Big 12 with 10? What we got? We got the
Big 10 has 14.
Big 10 with 14.
Yeah.
We just praise the Pac-12. Thank you, Pac-12.
Yeah. Thank you for changing your name. And you know what? Thank you, ACC and SEC, for having foresight to not name yourself around the number of schools in your league. You're the real winners.
They really are. And that's really the cream of the crop when it comes to conferences, so.
Yeah. No, that's 1 and 2, I think. You know, fuck you, Big Ten. But as far as the Big 12 goes.
Fuck you of the week, right there. We hit it.
Fuck you of the week, Big Ten. But as far as the Big 12 goes, because they're the subject. The realignment talk has been there ever since they got stuck down at 10 teams, but it heated up this year. I feel like this was the dominant conversation of the offseason in college football is the Big 12 realignment. And who are they going to add? Will they do it? The commissioner, Bowlesby, was adamantly in favor of it, had two different studies commissioned saying they should do it. Oklahoma at one point was pushing for it hard, and then randomly a month ago said, nah, let's not do it.
I can promise you, living in an area where one of the teams was rumored to be part of that expansion process, that was the headlines. There's no doubt about it. I mean, every Memphis fan was on edge about, ooh, are we going to get in? Are we not getting in? And then it came down that they didn't get in. And now it comes down that nobody's getting in, and everybody's like, yeah, screw all y'all.
Yeah, because Memphis didn't make the first cut. Like, right. The Big 12 basically said, everybody send us some stuff. And then they sort of cut that list down to about 8 schools, and Memphis was not in that list.
I love that it cut down to 8 schools, but then when you actually counted the report, there was 11 that were in the report. And you're like, how is there 8? The math doesn't make sense to journalists.
I know Arkansas State put in an application. And I know East Carolina put. Yeah. Arkansas State was like, hey, we could replace Arkansas. You know, the Razorbacks used to be in the Southwest Conference.
Same
we
school.
Could slide right in.
We're the same guys.
Yeah, we could slide. I mean, come on. We wear camo better than they do. You know, they're a bunch of sissified city southerners. We're
right.
Real Southerners.
Sure.
We'll cut your head off with a knife. That's the Arkansas State motto. But that's the thing that bothers me the most about all this is that they put out all this stuff to all of these, you know, G5 conferences who all were like, okay, this is our big chance, who all debased themselves publicly, like groveling to the Big 12. And then the Big 12 did not even have a meeting. Like, their entire conference meeting lasted about an hour. There's no way they really seriously discussed any of these schools in that amount of time.
They were everybody campaign for homecoming queen, but really the votes were already in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had gone to somebody's some rich guy's daughter. Like, none of y'all had a chance. So the biggest losers here, like, obviously, I think BYU, because they're the school that had the most to gain. I think because they're independent, and I think it's a not so big secret that independence has not been what they thought it would be. I think if you really seriously asked BYU when they went independent why they did it, they would have said, well, so it would be easier to join a conference.
For freedom.
Yeah. When they went independent, their big thought
Justice.
Was that they'd join the Big East. Then the Big East died.
And the so American it was like,
all right. way. These are all very Boy Scouts that, Boy Scouts concept, so it fits in with BYU. But their big thought was, we'll join the Big East, right? The Big East dies. They go, okay, maybe we can join the Big 12. They got fucked. They look pretty Big Easty now. And the Big 12.
They should try the Big
10.
They just gotta stick with conferences that start with big.
Yeah. I mean, the Big 10's not exactly taking applications, and they seem to be more interested in going east than west, but sure. Give it a, it can't hurt. I mean, you've already debased yourself.
Sure. Pitch freedom.
You know, and had that 2-week discussion about, no, BYU, they're all homophobes, aren't they? You know, which, that's not.
Well,
now
we're not having any of that discussion on this here, we're not discussing.
Well, I'm not
going to
go into the politics of that. I'm just saying, if you're a college, like, that's a thing people did not talk about BYU until they put in their application to the Big 12. So that's a thing that by putting that application in, BYU ended up in that kind of conversation on the other side. Which I'm sure they did not want or expect. You know, that I don't think they were expecting that either.
Sure.
It's something that ended up happening. So I think they've been the biggest loser. I think Cincinnati has been a major loser because they based so much of their identity around, well, we're really a Power 5 school that's just stuck here temporarily. Like, you know, we lost our job, but we'll get back on our feet. We got executive experience. And it's like,
bootstraps, baby.
No, the Big 12 basically looked at them and said, no. Like, you think you're somebody. Cincinnati thought they were Louisville Jr.
That's what this entire whole realignment's been, though. It's everyone thinking they're somebody, and then it being like, well, we're sorry. We're not trying to be rude, but you're not.
Yeah, really, everybody on down the line, even the schools that did get into places, like, they thought, oh, they're taking us because, like, there's the Rutgers syndrome, where it's like, Rutgers thought they were getting into the Big Ten because look at us, we always said we were important. And the real reason was, oh, no, the Big Ten wants to raid your state, and it'll be easier if you're in their conference. Like, you were not added to be good. You were added so Michigan and Ohio State could recruit New Jersey. But the big
thing. Do you think all this conference realignment and all this discussion that we're having is fun? Do you enjoy it?
I did at one point, but now that we've gotten down to this, I feel like the whole realignment thing was incredibly fun when it was like, oh shit, Nebraska's leaving. Nebraska, the Cornhuskers, one of the biggest programs of all time. Oh, Texas might be going to the Pac-12. There might be a super of 16 team super. But once we hit the point where it's like, well, maybe they'll let in Memphis. Yeah. You know, maybe UConn will get to join the Big 12. It's like, oh boy. Like,
right. That's where I'm at with all this, because it just continues to pull back the curtain and show you that, yeah, you're watching these athletes play and you're, you know, going to these schools and getting an education, but really it has nothing to do with any of that. It all has to do with how we can line our pockets with money. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, I don't know if it's better that we're seeing it or if it makes it less fun. I don't know. It's a bummer to me.
It feels like the conference, the schools in general went too far. Like the other rounds of realignment, they were limited and they were more like, oh man, Arkansas is going to play LSU every year now. And, you know, South Carolina, maybe they could be a program now. They're in the SEC. It was limited enough that it was like an exciting change. Whereas it feels like we've had so many changes and so many of them that don't even fully make sense. Like Maryland not being in the ACC. We're like, why is Maryland not in the ACC anymore? Like, why would anyone want to have stole Maryland? Like, why have I had to make this change in my life of not having Maryland in my chosen conference anymore?
We didn't really want them there anyway, and now someone stole them? I don't even understand.
It's like, what have you done? Why have you done this? And the Big 12, I mean, it's a conference that has gone from being, before all of realignment, it was by far the second best conference of all the power conferences. They had the best results on the field. You know, other than the SEC, they'd sent multiple people to different national championships. They had multiple national championships from different schools. I mean, they had it all going for them on the field. And then just, there's one lesson of the Big 12 is that the internal politics of this conference have been incredibly dysfunctional. And really there's a divide between the Texas schools that came over from the Southwest Conference and the Big 8 schools that were there at the beginning. And I think, if we're writing the death knell of this conference, we're writing it on the tombstone when the Big 12 does die eventually, because now it seems like it's more when, not if. When this conference dies, it's going to be they took too many schools from the tech. They took too many Southwest Conference schools at once. If they had just taken Texas and Texas A&M, those two schools might not have had the pull to be as politically fractious. They might have, they would have been isolated. They would have had to go along with everybody else. When you took four, they had enough of a voting block built in that they could actually get their own way and cause chaos politically. And
those jerks.
It's just it's a dysfunctional conference. You have two schools that have far different priorities from everybody else.
Well, and, I'm officially bored with conference realignment talk. How about the product on the field? What do you think the Big 12 has on the field this year?
Well, here's the other reason why the conference is in trouble. West Virginia is carrying that banner.
Woo!
Like, West Virginia is the school everybody in this conference is now rooting for. If you're not a coach or a player, if you're just like working in the offices, West Virginia, baby. One, cause you have to justify taking them. Cause since they took West Virginia, West Virginia has become like a 7-8 win team. And it's like, oh boy, we thought they were going to be a 10 win team. They probably aren't worth all this travel if they're just going to be a 7-win team every year. So on that level, but the main reason is because nobody wants Baylor to be representing this league in a playoff situation.
Does anyone outside of Baylor alums like Baylor at this point?
I don't even think all the Baylor alums are on
board with this. I'm not saying that they have 100% favorability among that group, but they have a 0% favorability outside of that group,
right? There's not a single soul in the Big 12 office that wants them to go undefeated and represent this league. There's not one.
And in fairness, you deserve that. If you hide rape, you deserve that. No one should like you.
No one has to make that case, I feel like. But with Baylor, it's like, I don't even think the Big 12 desperately wants them to lose twice. Cause if they just lose once, then they'll all be in the position of they gotta campaign for them because the conference really needs, the conference wants somebody representing them. You don't want to, you know, out of 3 years to have missed the playoff twice. If there's two losses, then you don't even have to try. It's like, well, you lost twice. But if there's one, you're going to feel like, oh, God, we still got a campaign for them. This is terrible. But if West Virginia's going undefeated, yeah, West Virginia, they're our boys. Come on, tune in, watch them. They're great. See Dana, his hair's going, but he don't care. He's still growing it long in the back.
Oh, poor Dana. I forgot Dana was there.
Dana was the most fired coach in America going into this year.
Yeah, which is crazy because like 3 years ago, I mean, he was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he'll always have that West Virginia Clemson bowl game.
He invented the jet sweep or did he just popularize it?
He popularized it. Bob Stitt, formerly of Colorado School of Mines, now of, Montana.
Ah, that fella. Sure.
He invented the mine sweeper play.
I'm sure he's got a Wikipedia page for that. If not, he's gonna have one here in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
So, that was me typing in case anyone out there wasn't sure. Yes, click.
Sure. West Virginia Clemson, they had that bowl game. West Virginia set their field on fire, and then those two programs went in opposite directions. Like, Clemson was like, yeah, that sucked. We got the hell beat out of us, but we're going to keep getting better. And West Virginia just went, like, way down into the toilet.
Oh, poor guys.
But Dana came into this year as athletic director. The guy who hired him has left a few years ago to go work in the NCAA. The current athletic director does not like him at all. And then now they're 5-0 and Dana's taunting the athletic director by name in press conferences. Just like, well, I don't know what Scott thought about that play, but it worked for us, right? I mean, he's in full ass like Spurrier mode. We're just like, nah, fuck it. Fire me. I dare you now.
Is West Virginia the best team in the conference right now?
Probably.
You've got them, you've got Baylor, and you've got Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma just, Oklahoma might be better though because they actually played better. Their two losses are
sure
to decent
played
teams.
People. Right.
It's just like Oklahoma. If you're a Big 12 fan, you would rather say West Virginia is better because it gives you the hope that your conference has somebody who could carry the banner. Whereas if Oklahoma ends up winning this conference, well, you know you're not elite.
Speaking of schedules, let's play a fun game. We should have this game. This is going to be a game we're going to try and make happen. Okay.
Give it to me.
West Virginia has played 5 games. TCU has played 6. I want you to see how many of their opponents you can name.
Oh, God. Okay, so Texas Tech. I think they've both played Texas Tech.
Wrong.
Okay, so TCU hasn't played them yet.
West Virginia did play them last week, yes.
So I think they've both played Iowa State?
Nope. TCU played Iowa State.
Okay. So West Virginia, who are their two wins? So we know they've beaten Texas Tech. Have they played Kansas State yet?
Yeah.
TCU's also played Kansas State, right?
No.
Oh, God. This is getting
so terrible.
You're
so terrible at this.
Yeah, I am. I mean,
so
that's
that just
a,
goes to show what your schedule is, right? I mean, TCU has South Dakota State.
TCU's played SMU.
They have played SMU. Good call. You jumped in on that one before I got to play with it.
Yeah.
And then West Virginia has played BYU and Youngstown State, which I'm sure was a battle. Actually,
Bo Pelini. Don't shit on Bo Pelini's Youngstown State.
I didn't. I never meant any. Bo, please forgive me.
Do you know
Bo, you're invited onto this conference. Actually, you can take my spot next week, Bo. Please. God, save my ass. Get me off of this.
Do you know who the school president is at Youngstown State?
Oh, of course I do. Yeah, it's, I have no idea.
It's Jim Tressel.
I have no clue. Oh, I actually might have known that, but I don't care.
Sure. Youngstown boys.
Does like, everyone have to wear sweater vests? Like all the staff?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Students too.
See, oh, is it? Wow. Okay.
It's one of those schools. Great. Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Well, that was the most fun we've had on this podcast is watching Dan get all of this wrong.
Yeah. Like not, well, I mean, if you're used to hearing me get everything wrong if you hear our picks every week. So.
Would you care to make some picks for next week? Bum, 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 bum.
Sure. Oh God. What are the point spreads for these games?
No, heavens knows.
Yeah, that's the issue. Well, the game's being played. Oklahoma State is going to play Kansas. I don't care what the spread is. Take Oklahoma State. You name that sumbitch. Take Oklahoma State. 50, still take Oklahoma State.
Take them.
Kansas ain't worth a good goddamn. But that is a, man, don't ever hire Charlie Weiss as your coach, because it takes you years to wash that off. No, Florida still ain't washed that off of him being, he was only their offensive coordinator for 1 year. Their offense still ain't got the stank out. And let alone Kansas. Kansas got full blown Charlie Weiss, you know. And they don't have the money Notre Dame does to pay for the best treatment. Like they just don't have all that.
Oklahoma, Texas Tech. I've got the spread on that one for you.
Hit. Give it to me.
13.5.
Yeah, I would take Oklahoma there.
You think I can beat that spread? All right.
Yeah. I mean, are we almost at the point where we have to start saying maybe Texas Tech should fire the golden boy, the greatest quarterback in school history, the man who put him on the map, Cliff Kingsbury? Is it maybe time to fire a pretty boy coach?
I don't know. Is he good looking? I'd say keep him if he's good looking.
Oh, that's the only thing he's famous for.
Well,
is how good looking he is.
Well, there you go. You've got my answer.
But okay, so if they do end up firing him, the overwhelming odds they're going to hire a really fat, ugly coach, right? Like, you just go the opposite way.
What was his name?
Mangini! That's the guy. He's got Big 12 experience.
Yes,
he won at Kansas. Oh, Mangino. Baby Mangino.
My apologies.
Oh, baby Mangino was everybody's favorite.
Sure.
Deadspin meme ever,
excellent
probably.
Meme. That was back when Deadspin mattered.
Well, I mean.
Deadspin, you're dead to me. Well, actually, you're dead to everyone, aren't you?
No, they're still around.
They're around? I thought Gawker was all
Gawker's
gone.
All the other Gawker websites are.
Shows you how much I care. TCU, yep. West Virginia. West Virginia has got to win by 6.
I don't know if they can do that.
You don't think so?
I mean, they are in Morgantown. That's a bigger home field advantage than in other conferences, just because they got to travel so goddamn far.
Mm-hmm.
6 seems like a lot. Fuck it. I'll take West Virginia.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take West Virginia. I'm usually a big fan of TCU and their defense, but I don't have that much faith in them right
now.
They haven't had it this year.
They have not had it this
year.
Their defense,
which is why
shredded.
They're not fun to watch anymore. They were fun to watch when they were running their little, what was it, 4-2-5?
Yeah, I think part of their problem is so many other defenses copied them.
Yeah.
And so it's not like this weird, freakish defense, you know, that you have to face once a year. Because
everybody's really moving that safety around and roving the linebacker or the DN now. It's in vogue for everybody. It's just not. Yeah.
And they used to be able to overcome their recruiting issues by finding undersized players and fitting them into that system. And now everybody recruits those undersized players. Like, that's what everybody's looking for.
Sorry, TCU, your time is gone.
Yeah. Well, no, they'll still be good. Like, they're still good enough in that. Like, just being in Dallas, having smart coaches, they're still going to be like an 8-9 win team every year.
Go ahead and ride off into the sunset, just like your conference.
Okay.
It's over.
Poor TCU's, but TCU's going to be ready to handle when the Big 12 falls apart, though, because they're like, we've been through this. You can't hurt us. We survived. We were in the whack for 2 years. You think this bothers us? Fuck you. Texas, Kansas State. Kansas State favored by 3. Ooh, I don't know if I ever am if I'm getting points to bet against Kansas State, I'm probably doing it. If you give me any points at all.
Yeah. And speaking of another program riding off into sunset.
Oh, Bill. Poor Bill.
Whole conference is dying. It's
it's the cancer ward of college football.
Oh my God, this is terrible. Like, I started this podcast hating the Big 12, and now I just feel sorry for them. I feel like I should send them flowers.
Yeah, they need it. Oh, speaking of, I forgot to pick up some flowers tonight. Anyway, that's a separate conversation.
Sure.
Kansas State, who do they hire after Bill Snyder? I mean, that's the real reason. Because, like, Kansas State forced Bill Snyder out the first time. Like,
yeah, and then brought him back. forced him back in.
Like, they pushed him out the door when he turned, like, 62 or 63, and they replaced him with a young, hotshot coordinator by the name of Ron Prince, who immediately cratered the program. And then they went, oh, no, we can't do better than Bill Snyder. Let's bring him back. So now what do you do? Like, you already know if you hire some hotshot, smarty pants, everybody's talking about him coordinator to come to Kansas State. He's probably not going to do all that well. Like, who do you hire?
Just don't. You're not even a Power Five conference anymore. You're dead. Just wrap it up.
I mean, there's something I'm noticing, and I don't want to veer off of Big 12 territory, but it's like at this point, if you're a small school, if you're a lower end Power Five conference and you have a coaching opening, everybody just immediately starts going, well, you should hire an option coach. You should run the option. Cause like every time, like Purdue, everybody's like, oh, you should hire an option coach. Cause you're Purdue. So it's like, I feel like the Big 12 could theoretically have five different schools where it's like, okay, yeah, you should run the option. Like,
Paul Johnson is going to be in high demand.
Yeah. Paul Johnson is going to move out to Kansas, to Manhattan, Kansas, and go, oh, okay, I don't care. I don't care about you. I don't care about this. I don't care about anybody.
That's how I feel right now. I don't care about you. I don't care about this. I don't care about the Big 12.
I do have a line on Oklahoma State, Kansas. It is 23.5, which is more than low enough for me to take Oklahoma State.
You feel good on that one, huh?
Yeah, I feel better. I feel better now that I know what it is.
Speaking of spreads and still trying to get us out of the Big 12 because, my God, this is boring. Alabama, the Alabama spread this week. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
It's kind of funny.
Okay.
Alabama is playing against Texas A&M. This is top five. Both teams are in the top five. Alabama has a 16.5 point favorite.
Oh, God.
I mean, you have to take the points there, right? I'm taking Texas A&M. Surely they can keep it within two touchdowns.
Yeah. I'll have to talk to Zach about that, but.
Yeah, y'all enjoy that one.
You have that one on the record. You're taking Texas A&M.
I don't feel confident, but I'm going to take them.
I did that last week with Tennessee. Cause it's like, God, Tennessee, they've won all these games, 13.5. That's a lot of points. I'm taking Tennessee. Right. Oh God, it's over. Oh God, it's over in the first quarter. I'm already wrong. And that's where we leave because I'm already wrong could be the alternative name to this podcast as a whole.
Thank God for that. Zach, I miss you.
Ooh, all right. That was an exciting conference spotlight from you, Dan. A lot of fun. A lot of fun realignment talk. Before we get into pick'ems, anything from any other world of sport you want to bring up? Like, maybe a really fun baseball postseason you haven't been paying any attention to?
Shoot. Them boys, they hit them balls. That's what they do. They run them bases.
And here's your reminder about this too, Dan. NBA starts next week.
Thank God. Thank God. We need some NBA in our lives.
Yeah. I think next week we're not going to go a full preview, but we're going to take a little dive into the NBA. We're going to dip our toes in. I don't want to go head first until Christmas, but we're going to dip our toes in. There's some big moves in the offseason I think we'll talk about. Should be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. And the other thing I'm looking forward to is some people talking about how Golden State blew a 3-1 lead, which not enough people talk about.
Yeah, people forget that. But yeah, Golden State blew a 3-1 lead to Cleveland.
Sure.
So, but we mentioned Cleveland. The Indians now are on the verge of going to the World Series. If Cleveland wins two titles, is this it?
Yeah, well, this is Cleveland. At the very least, we'll be living in Cleveland. We'll have to change the name. I mean, if the Indians win the World Series, that kind of guarantees that Trump loses Ohio, right?
Yeah.
Cause there's not going to be enough mad people. Everybody's going to be like, you know what? Things are going pretty good these days. This is all pretty great.
Yeah, but how long till we get sick of Cleveland? Like, remember when Boston won and we're like, already. Oh yeah, Boston. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we tired of Cleveland already?
As soon as they win the second title in a different sport, then it's like, all right, fuck these guys.
Yeah, fuck them. My team hasn't won in like 30 years. Great. Thanks. But yeah, let's get on to everyone's favorite segment and our most successful pick'ems.
Pick'ems.
Last week, we gave a pick'em for a game that had already been canceled by the time you listened to the podcast. So sure. Sorry about that. That was, Navy somebody. Yeah. From last week.
It happens.
It happens. All right. Well, let's kick off with, one that's sure to be wild. It's a pretty bad week this week, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. Unless you're an SEC guy, you're not really hyped about this week in football. Let's kick off, at least it's a Friday game, Oregon-Cal. Cal favored by 3. Do we know anything about these two teams besides the fact Oregon sucks?
Okay, here's the deal. And this is going to be my strategy the whole way through, because I did watch a lot of Brady Hoke Michigan. And that is this. If Oregon is playing a spread team, take the spread team. Because this same Michigan defense that Jim Harbaugh has as the number one defense in the country, the entire same team, with very few exceptions, were playing for Brady Hoke, and that same team was rated like 25th in the country. With all the same players, they're now number one. And the reason why is that Brady Hoke, when you line up and play a spread team, he still coaches as if it's 1994 and everybody's lining up in the I formation. His teams don't get lined up properly. They don't play proper coverage technique. You'll end up with a linebacker guarding a slot receiver, and it always ends in points on points on points on points. So I'm taking Cal because Oregon's going to lose this game too, because Oregon's going to give up 70 points to Cal.
All right. A team we haven't talked about much, which is having a good bit of success thus far in the season. Nebraska favored by about 24.5 versus Purdue. Nebraska beat a team?
Points.
Yeah. It feels like a lot.
Especially because Purdue might get the fired coach bounce, where, all right, the coach is fired, that weight's lifted off everybody, and the coaching staff already sort of knows, instead of having that dread every week, it's like, all right, we're coaching for our next gig. Let's go out there and get something done. That said, Purdue's pretty bad. So, yeah. I don't know. I might take Nebraska.
Yeah.
I'd stay away from it. Yeah. If you force me at gunpoint, I'd probably take Nebraska.
Yeah. All right, Wisconsin favored by 3.5 versus Iowa.
Yeah, Wisconsin all day. Iowa's trash.
I'm not sure about taking Wisconsin as a favorite, but it's only 3.5 and Iowa sucks. So yeah. Give me Wisconsin too.
Taking Wisconsin is more a reflection on Iowa than anything else.
Yeah. All right. This is my kind of game to watch in the ACC this week. NC State, Louisville. Louisville's favored by 19.5. Depends on your guy. I'm taking NC State catching 20.
Yeah. The one caveat is that NC State knows they should have won last week and they blew it. So they might, you might have that game where, you might have that hangover game where it's like, God damn it. We played so perfect and we still lost. Damn it. But with that out of the way, Louisville they haven't looked all that good in a few weeks. NC State's pretty good. I'm taking State, taking the alma mater.
Yeah, I'm circling NC State there. I like them. Like them catching 20. Like I could see them going down by more than 20.
That's an insane number of points.
Yeah, and NC State's scrappy. They might score some garbage time and make that a 2-score game or even like 19.
If NC State's proven anything over the last two weekends, it's that they are more than willing to get down in the mud and play an ugly game to keep it close.
Yeah. All right, speaking of ugly, South Carolina, favored by 21 against UMass.
I'm never, if I'm a Will Muschamp, if I'm seeing a Will Muschamp team playing somebody else and Will Muschamp is giving a lot of points, I'm taking them points all the time, all day.
Yeah, I like UMass there too, I think, because I don't, 20's a lot.
Look, Will Muschamp, for anybody who wants to pick at us for that, Will Muschamp managed to lose to a 4-8 Georgia Southern team with 5-star players at Florida. Like this, he's not a good coach. And
This is also
It was the worst Georgia Southern team in 30 years.
But they also had nothing to play for the whole year. That Florida game was their biggest game of the season because they couldn't go to a bowl.
If you're a bad team playing a team with five-star talent, it really shouldn't matter how hard you wanted to win.
All right. This next one, you're going to make fun of me for it. Illinois, Michigan. Michigan favored by 36. Give me Illinois.
Okay.
I've been that's thinking a lot Illinois of points. Is better. Yeah, that's a lot of
that's
points.
That's a lot of points.
I feel like Illinois is better than we give them credit for.
I do not think they're – well, they lost to Purdue, so they're not they're not good.
Yeah. But they're not 36 points. They're not Rutgers.
Well, Rutgers lost by 70, so
– yeah.
They might – I mean, not being as bad as Rutgers, you might still lose by 36. I am taking Michigan because I don't know how Illinois scores.
I like Illinois there. Circle it.
Okay. If I'm not going to call you crazy because I don't ever think anybody's crazy for taking 35 points. When a spread is that big, it's like, all right, I get it.
I just don't believe in Michigan.
No. Okay. Now you're losing me.
I just don't like Harbaugh.
Illinois is trash and Michigan may have the best defense we've seen in 30 years. So
we'll see. Another one. Oregon State going to Washington. Washington's getting favored by 37. Are they that much better than Oregon State?
I don't think they're that much better than Oregon State. That's too many points.
Yeah, I like Oregon State there catching 37.
I mean, it was one. I know they did that to Oregon and they scored all those points on Oregon, but that was a game that those players had been hearing for like the entire time they've been in school about the streak against Oregon. I don't know if Washington's going to be that is going to be that up to play Oregon State.
Yeah.
Like that's a game where you sleepwalk through for a half and then win by 20.
My lock of the week, Colorado catching 2.5, going to Stanford, lock it up, do the horn if you have it at home. Give me Colorado catching 2.5 versus Stanford. I think they beat Stanford outright.
Yeah. This is a bad Stanford team and Colorado has been downright good. I can see that. Convince me. Give me something.
Stanford sucks. Okay. That's the best way to say it. And Colorado gave Michigan its closest game.
That did it for me. You got me. Yep.
You got me. Another weird Utah, catching 7 versus UCLA.
Ooh, that game has moved a ton. Do you know what that line was Sunday?
What was it?
It was even. That was a pick'em on Sunday.
So a lot of action towards UCLA. I like Utah.
Yeah.
I don't think UCLA is that good or good at all, really.
Well, no, the action would have all been to Utah. Like when it was even, everybody was betting on Utah and they just kept making the line bigger and bigger and bigger to slow the action.
No. UCLA's favored.
Oh, UCLA's favored?
Yes.
What? Oh God, take that. What do people know that I don't know that they're all betting up UCLA?
Yeah,
UCLA's bad.
Yeah, that's from Westgate Superbook in Vegas. So I mean,
wow, something's up. You know what? That's a game that makes me go, something's happening. I don't know. I'm probably staying away.
Yeah,
because that is a bewildering line to me.
Yeah, that's a weird one because Utah's pretty good. All right. Ole Miss, LSU. LSU favored by 5.5. I kind of like it. I think Coach O gets the win here.
Well, he's got a lot of reasons. I mean, A, he's coaching for a gig. He thinks he can get it. So he's gonna be fired up every week. But he's especially going to be fired up for the place where he did not have a good time as a head coach.
Yeah.
In his previous.
And I think we're all rooting for Coach O to get that job. So I think.
All of us.
Give me LSU here.
But isn't that kind of crazy, though? Ole Miss is pretty good, right?
Yeah, they are, but I just don't know. You don't really know in the West. I feel like there's Bama, and then there's like Mississippi State at the bottom, kind of, and everybody else is kind of the same. Except A&M
I think
might
Texas,
be above everybody.
A&M has separated themselves from that middle group.
But yeah, after A&M and Bama, it's kind of everybody's about equal.
My heart says LSU. My brain says Ole Miss.
Go with the heart. I'm taking LSU.
The heart wants what it wants, and the heart says LSU.
All right, but I will go against my heart in this one. Auburn favored by 10 versus Arkansas. Give me Arkansas catching 10 all day.
That's too many points.
Yeah, I don't like Auburn. I don't think Auburn's a 10-point favorite. I don't like that at all.
Well,
I mean, they could win that game by a few scores, but I'm not betting on. That's not one.
You know what? I've changed my mind. I'm taking Auburn because Arkansas's defense has been bad, And Auburn's defense has been pretty good.
So yeah. My offense is looking better.
Yeah. I don't see how Arkansas stops them. Like, this seems like a game that's tailor-made for Auburn to have, like, 450, 500 yards, and then everybody go, oh, Gus is back.
This feels like a three-overtime game. Because it's Auburn-Arkansas, so, like, you know you're going to get too much football.
Yeah, you say that. Okay, maybe I should go to Arkansas. Maybe I should.
Yeah.
I'm waffling.
Ohio State.
You know what? Fuck that. I'm going to believe in Auburn, because you should be believing in your team, damn it.
I'm not. I'm going to be very cautious about this Auburn team. All right. Ohio State, favored by 19.5 versus Penn State. If you don't take Ohio State here, you're supporting child rape. So what do you got, Dan?
Oh, God. Can I just support James Franklin?
Nope.
Yeah, Penn State's not very good.
I think we're all like rooting for Ohio State to win.
Like, their defense is in the same spot as Tennessee. Like, Penn State does not have a scholarship linebacker on the team. They're playing walk-ons across the board at linebacker, and you're now going to play Ohio State the way they run the ball? No, man. You're screwed. So, yeah, I'm taking Ohio State here.
All right. And kind of the main event of the day, Alabama, favored by 19-18.5, depends on who it is, versus A&M. Give me Alabama. I'm taking Alabama. I think they kill A&M.
I think A&M's
a good team, but they're soft.
I think I'm gun shy a little bit because of the Tennessee game, and this is basically the same scenario as last week, but I don't think Alabama's that much better than everybody. I think they've just sort of lucked into a schedule full of people who just can't match up with them to this point. Texas A&M's defense is downright feisty. I do not see Alabama being able to run the ball for 400 yards this week. They're going to have to throw it, and their quarterback isn't very good at throwing the ball.
But he can make plays with his legs. And that's something A&M's had trouble with some quarterbacks who can move.
That's true. But, I mean, Alabama's had the same kind of trouble. And Texas A&M has a quarterback who can run. And Texas A&M runs the ball incredibly well.
No, Saban teams classically don't do so hot versus, especially defenses, don't do so hot against running quarterbacks.
So, even if Alabama does run the ball for like 350 yards and has a bunch of points, are you really trusting Alabama's defense to be able to stop Texas A&M enough for them to win by 16?
I think A&M makes mistakes. I think A&M gets scared in the situation. Mm. Couple of turnovers, next thing you know, it's a 30-point game.
But at some point, Alabama's scoring all these defensive touchdowns. Like, that's incredibly fluky. Like, defensive touchdowns are one of the flukiest things in sports.
Is it? I feel like that's something like the nerds say.
It's fluky because there's no way to coach turnovers. All you can do is put guys in a position, but like there's nothing, you cannot coach it up to where defensive backs will catch balls thrown at them because they're defensive backs. It's not what they're good at. There's nothing you can do to practice fumble recovery because fumbles are incredibly fluky and where the ball is going to bounce to. Like there's no way to predict that. So if you're a team and a defense, especially that's relying on a lot of turnovers, that luck's going to run out. Now, it might last the whole season. We saw that with Iowa last year.
Yeah.
You know, Iowa had incredible turnover luck. It took a whole year for that to change. So Alabama might keep getting that luck for the rest of the year, but that's not something you can go in predicting. Yeah, Alabama's going to score two defensive touchdowns.
I'm going to predict now Alabama scores two defensive touchdowns, four turnovers. 30-point game. Bama wins.
Texas A&M is going to keep this close.
I think you'll be wrong.
This is going to
Alabama's second week in a row.
This is going to overtime.
I don't see this one going. I think A&M's soft, but we'll find out.
I don't think this is your mama's Texas A&M team. They've been very hard-nosed this season.
No, and I do love the defensive coordinator.
John Chavis.
Yeah.
I think John Chavis has done more to change the culture at that school than anybody.
Yeah.
Because he's turned him into a mean-ass bunch of assholes.
And I like where A&M's going, but I'm not sure they're there yet. We'll find out, though. 3:30, CBS.
Uncle Vern and Gary.
Yes, sir. All right, but as we get ready to wrap up the show this week, anything you're looking forward to this weekend?
I am looking forward to... Let me see. I want to see if West Virginia can keep this going. Because if West Virginia beats Texas Christian, then we all of a sudden, like, we At some point, we're going to have to start talking about them seriously, right? Because they will be an undefeated team from a Power 5 conference. At some point, we got to start giving them a little bit of respect, right?
Maybe. If we're really going to consider the Big 12 Power 5, if that team's not Texas or Oklahoma.
Look, I mean, they're in the books. We can argue with the books, but that's what the score says. That's what the card says in Brett Bielema language.
Thing I'm looking forward to, we talked about in the roundup, looking forward to Landry Jones playing the Patriots. The Landry Jones era begins Sunday. And me and West Coast West are really excited about watching him start for the Steelers. So.
Okay.
That should be a fun one.
I just thought of a better thing to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
We no longer have to talk about realignment for at least a year.
Thank God. Well, luckily we'll be able to talk about it in February when there's nothing to talk about.
Right. We can put it off until the off season, which is where it belongs.
Exactly. Realignment talk does not belong in the regular season.
And thank you, Big 12, for finally putting it to bed for a few months.
For now.
Even if you are, like, the dumbest conference.
Ever. But yeah, you got a fuck you of the week.
Oh, I think I had a fuck you of the week on the segment, which we totally did in order, because that's how we do them. There's no way I could have forgotten my fuck you of the week. That's impossible. But I believe I had one already.
My fuck you of the week, Eddie Lacy. Just traded for him in fantasy, gonna be out several weeks now.
Oh, he's Alabama's finest, right?
Yeah, so fuck you, Eddie Lacy. Piece of shit.
Can at some point we stop, like, talking about Alabama running backs as if they're any good?
Well, I think there was one. Did well. TJ Yeldon had a decent rookie year.
He's not a running back, is he?
Yeah.
I thought he was a receiver.
TJ Yeldon? For Jacksonville.
Okay.
You're thinking of T.Y. Hilton.
I mean, none of their running backs really turn out to be all that good, and they've had a couple of really big busts.
Yeah.
Like, Mark Ingram.
Mark Ingram's had a pretty good career.
He's been a career number two guy.
He's been starter for a good while now in New Orleans, like three years now.
Who was the guy that Indianapolis traded for?
Trent Richardson.
Yeah, that guy was awful.
Yeah.
And none of these guys end up being great. They're always like, okay, they're okay. Like, at best.
Because, they're not like Auburn running backs.
They're not running behind a monster offensive line of five stars with five star wide receivers and a five star quarterback. So, Alabama running backs, fuck you.
But, you wanna get some plugs in before we get out of here?
Oh yeah, the Champions at Heart podcast I think it's still at Fire Pro Podcast. we should probably change that at some point, but yeah. The Champions at Heart podcast, we looked at the history of the decline of the AWA.
Ooh.
History. And next week we will be finishing our year-long look at the final year of WCW.
Mm. So, sounds like a wild ride.
Yep.
You can check me out at Zachary T. Gilbert on Twitter. Like I said, we're tweeting about playoffs. We're getting into it with college football on Saturdays. We got basketball coming up. Going to have a lot of basketball talk on the feed, so get excited. Follow it.
It's beginning to feel anything a lot else, like Dan? Basketball.
And I guess there's probably stuff going on at Half Guarded, too. So check that
out. Oh, God, yes. All the great podcasts at halfguarded.com.
Yeah.
Mics, Comic Connections. You got to check all this stuff out.
Yeah. We're not the only great thing on here, people.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think that's it for me this week, Dan.
Oh, boy. Well, that means there's only one thing left to do. Play the music, Jason.